mom, you know, do you have a retirement account? I say, yes, you know, I'm investing my retirement. And we start talking about retirement account. She says she puts in 6%, the company gives her 6, you know, so on. Yeah. So, okay, cool. So, how about investing 1% in Bitcoin? I'm like, okay. She paused for a second. I'm like, oh, I guess. I was like, yes! Orange pill.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Foster Inclusion Podcast, and thank you so much for joining me. I'm your host, Saida Gomez Fleury. If you are based in the Caribbean, this episode is definitely for you. Rohan Smith, a software developer from Jamaica and based in Scarborough, Tobago, joins me to discuss Bitcoin in the Caribbean. If you care about saving your money and maintaining purchasing value in the face of inflation, listen in. Rohan shares how he got into Bitcoin, provides a simplified analogy to understand why Bitcoin goes up in value, how to acquire Bitcoin in the Caribbean, and tips on what to expect if you are new to Bitcoin. He's also working on a tool to allow people in the Caribbean to acquire Bitcoin more easily and on a regular basis. If by chance you're a legal or regulatory expert and you're interested in Bitcoin, reach out to Rohan on Twitter. His handle is at Frazraz. That's F-R-A-Z-R-A-S. You can also connect with me at Foster Inclusion. And guys, I've done something a little different this time. I released an extended version of this episode because our conversation gets surprisingly deep. We end up speaking about relationships, love, spirituality, giving, food, and so much more. That episode is also up, so if you want to get the full scope on how Bitcoin leads us to talk about love, I'm still smiling and gushing a bit, but it was pretty cool. If you want to get the full scope on how we got there, go check it out.
Right.
Rohan, how are you?
I'm doing awesome.
You're doing awesome. Yeah. Thanks so much for agreeing to be on my podcast.
Sure, no problem.
So you're in the U.S. now, getting ready to go to El Salvador, right?
I can't wait. It's been a while. I've been waiting, but yeah, it's almost here.
I know. I'm so excited for you. When did you actually sign up for the conference?
I guess less than a month ago. Just about a month ago, I signed up. I was in the early bird sign up, you know, so I got the best price. And yeah, nice. I was really excited to get there.
Nice. And you fly out this evening or tomorrow?
I fly out on Monday. The conference starts
Monday.
That's the 15th, I believe. The conference starts on the 16th. So I'll be there the night before.
The night before. And I saw on Twitter that you're facing a bit of a dilemma. Jamaica versus El Salvador in the World Cup qualifiers.
Yeah. We've been rivals for a long time because Jamaica's in the same zone for the World Cup qualifying. So I like El Salvador, but I think I like Jamaica a little bit better.
Well, yeah. And that's actually a nice segue. Can you give us a brief introduction?
Right. So my name is Rohan Smith. I'm a Jamaican born, I guess, if I should label myself, software developer, entrepreneur. I currently live in Trinidad and Tobago.
In Scarborough.
Yes, Scarborough, Trinidad and Tobago. Tobago, there are two islands, so I'm in the smaller island, which is in Tobago. Around the capital city of Scarborough. I'm a remote software developer, so my job is pretty much working on software projects, mostly in the US. I do mostly web development, so I work on these projects and from my small island home. close to the beach. Nice. So I get the best of both worlds, right? So, and I've been doing that for perhaps past 12, 13 years. So yeah, that's I guess the general thing that I do. And you know, I love Bitcoin. I've been around the space for a little while, and you know, I fall in love with Bitcoin more and more every day.
Nice. You know, fun fact. So my family, both my parents are from Trinidad, mm-hmm. Princess Town.
Okay.
And I grew up in Scarborough. But not Scarborough, Jamaica, Scarborough, Ontario,
right.
Which is a suburb of Toronto.
So. Right. Yeah, my sister was in Scarborough for a while. So it was kind of funny that we were both in the same city in different countries.
Yep, totally. And Scarborough is known. Well, at least, so I'm not afraid or ashamed of revealing my age. I'm 43.
Oh, you don't look it.
Thank you. When I was, growing up in the 90s, dance hall was like, it was life. Everyone was into dance hall. Like your parents could be from Sri Lanka, from the UK, from Trinidad, from wherever. Everyone was into dance hall. So I have like a soft spot in my heart for Jamaican music and Jamaican food.
Yes. Yeah. And it's the same here. When I moved to Trinidad and Tobago about 8 years ago. And I was shocked to realize that they play dancehall music perhaps more than I hear it in Jamaica. you know, there's soca and calypso that usually play around carnival time. But as soon as carnival is finished, they're back into reggae dancehall. And that was just like shocking to me. I thought Jamaicans were like the main consumers of dancehall. But I realized the Caribbean on a whole loves that type of music, so.
Even in Switzerland, I've like this past summer we went to like this I guess outdoor kind of concert festival thing, and like there were like I guess two sound stages, and on the one side it was like dancehall, 90s dancehall, and like lovers rock playing in Switzerland in right. Geneva.
Yeah, there are a lot of reggae and dancehall artists who. They can't make it in Jamaica because it's so competitive. So they tour Europe, and that's where they make their income, you know, because there's an audience in Europe for dancehall and reggae music. So I've heard of it. Mm-hmm.
Before COVID, Sizzla used to come through. I swear he was here like once a month.
Yeah.
I saw his posters everywhere. Mm-hmm. But we digress, I'm sorry. So how did you get into software development?
Right, so I think I was born with like a CPU somewhere in the back of my head. I just had an affinity to computers. Since I was a child, I didn't have a computer until very late actually. But I've always just been curious about them. I think I got my first computer when I was about 13, 14, around that age. And when I got that, I just spent hours. I had no internet at some times, but I just go around and clicking around inside the computer in control panel and playing around with just curiosity just burned in my heart. And from that time, I knew that this is the career path that I'd like to go down. Because it wasn't work for me, it was fun. You know, I just like tinkering. And, you know, that just led me to the career that I'm in today.
Nice. That's that first exposure is so important, especially at a young age. Because you don't have as much social pressure. So you really, like, see who you are and what you enjoy. So from software development, like, how did you learn about Bitcoin, or what was your first exposure to that, and how did you fall down the rabbit hole?
Right. So I'm into tech. I just love everything tech, and I'm always like an early adopter. I try to, once a new tech comes out, you know, I'm onto it. I was on Twitter like 14 years ago. I'm just into whatever is new because I just like to see technology progress, right? And however, being in the Caribbean, you're not always on the cutting edge because the people around you are not always into technology as well. But we had a group, like a mailing list group back in 2013 with a number of Caribbean web developers and developers in general. And somehow the Bitcoin came up on the mailing list. And, you know, and of course, once I hear about this new technology, I'm going to start to, you know, look into it. And from there, I just started researching, you know, what is this Bitcoin thing? How do you buy it? Where, you know, but it was for me just something new, something fun. I never understood the magnitude or the gravity of what Bitcoin was at the time. It was just another new tech. And I of course jumped into it. I bought some Bitcoin. It was just nice to play with that. I could send Bitcoin to someone the next side of the world and they'd have instant money. At the time, you know, I looked into mining Bitcoin. By the time I learned about it, it was a bit too difficult to mine on my computer, but you know, I investigated all the different areas of Bitcoin at that time. And you know, it just seemed fun, and I have been going down the rabbit hole since then.
Wow, that's you were part of a mailing list, so that's good. I found, like, when I was first exposed to Bitcoin, I was the only one within my circle, so I spent a while just wondering if I'm crazy for, like, for seeing them. For me, it's more the social benefits that it brings about and, like, fixing money, basically. And so I would say that I wasn't so courageous as to be, like, open and vocal. I think I created my Twitter account in 2017 and, like, didn't tweet at all because I was too scared. So, but yeah. So in the Caribbean, like, what would you say is the sort of, like, macro context? Like, why would a technology like Bitcoin be useful for the everyday person?
Right. So when I first heard about Bitcoin, the first thing that hit my mind was remittances, right?
Yeah.
I don't know the exact percentage, but in Jamaica, one of the main sources of foreign exchange into the country is through remittance. We are huge on sending money back from the US and Europe back into Jamaica to support families and so on.
Yeah.
So it has become an enormous part of the economy. But we know that, you know, once you're using the typical, the traditional remittance services like Western Union, MoneyGram, so on, they take a chunk of your money, right? You know, I've been a part of the, I've received remittance from overseas, and you know that they had to pay a certain fee to get money to you. So once I heard about the Bitcoin, I was like, hey, this is an awesome source of, you know, peer-to-peer remittance. And, you know, I started investigating down that avenue because I thought that was the most impactful for the Caribbean at the time, because not only Jamaica, there are a number of other Caribbean countries that depend on remittance. And that's where I kind of positioned Bitcoin as a solution for the Caribbean. And over time, I've seen where it can grow far beyond that. Just looking on commerce in general, a large population of the Caribbean is unbanked. And, you know, you pretty much have to carry on the cash with you wherever you go. And then there's on the merchant side as well, is that there are merchants who want to do digital payments, but there's a lot of red tape and, you know, bureaucracy when it comes down to getting just a simple point of sale device. You know, it's hard for a typical person to do that. So I saw that as well for just to help commerce in general in Jamaica. And just seeing how Bitcoin would solve those problems just makes me very excited about the technology. And I'm looking forward to play some part in helping the Caribbean, adopt Bitcoin to aid in some of those solutions.
So earlier you talked about the mailing list that you were part of. Since the mailing list in 2013, what is the Bitcoin scene like in Jamaica, excuse me, or Trinidad, or even Tobago?
Right. So, funny enough, that mailing list kind of petered out after a few years. As people transitioned to social media, I didn't see as much talk around Bitcoin, but I still was kind of playing around with it. In fact, the story with my first purchase is that I tried to figure out what Bitcoin was, and then I decided I'd purchase some. At the time, I purchased, I think, $150 worth of Bitcoin, and Bitcoin at the time was worth $300, right? And, you know, as Bitcoin does, its money go up technology, it went up 100%, and the price went up to $600. And I was like, I have $300, I invested $150, and I now I have $300, right? And I was like, wow, this is so amazing. And then a guy said, you know, do you have any Bitcoin? I need some Bitcoin to buy. It's like, hey, what? I made 100%. That is awesome. I'm going to sell this guy. And I sold him my Bitcoin. I made 100% profit. And I felt like the happiest guy ever. Right?
Yeah. The smartest man in the world.
Exactly, right? And I sat with an empty wallet and I watched Bitcoin go up to 1,000. 2,000, 3,000, 4,000, all the way up to $19,000, and I had zero. And I just depressed. I was sad. I don't know what words I had. I just kept on calculating and saying, you know, how much money would I have now if I just left that money in my wallet? And of course, as Bitcoin does, it crashes, and we know that great crash in 2017.
Yeah,
and it went all the way down to I think like $3,000, and I started just doing more research and investigating about what this technology really was. Will it die? I mean, for something to fall from $19,000 to $3,000, that seems volatile and like something's wrong with this. But then, as I started to investigate further and further, I started to see the fundamentals behind Bitcoin. And I started learning about scarcity. You know, the decentralization, start to learn, you know, the impact it's having in countries. Because I think at that time, Venezuela was jumping in on Bitcoin. Because the Venezuelan Bolivar, I think, started to, you know, devalued. And Venezuelans had to find a way to hold on to their property. So a lot of people were converting their Bolivars to Bitcoin. And they were inflating and deflating in opposite directions, right? There was hyperinflation for Bolivars and Bitcoin was hyperdeflation, right? And it's, I started seeing how its effectiveness in other regions and saying, you know, this technology seems like it's making sense. Even though at the point it didn't return to its $19,000, price point. I was seeing value beyond the actual price of Bitcoin. And interesting how I started going back into Bitcoin. A friend of mine, you know, we started working on a company, online company, to sell proxies like VPNs, right?
Yeah.
No, people who buy VPNs are people who want some amount of anonymity and, you know, they want to be outside of the system. So they've kept on asking for options to pay in Bitcoin. I was like, okay, sure.
Sure.
Right. So I hooked up a Bitcoin payment on our system and they started paying us in Bitcoin. And every month I'd, you know, take profits from the business and to cover my bills and expenses and whatever. And, but I something just said, don't spend the Bitcoin, keep it. So I just like, okay, I'll put the Bitcoin away, whatever. I just kept, you know, putting away the Bitcoin. And I kept on learning more and more about it. And then I realized, hey, I don't really want to spend this at all. You know, and, you know, the company just kept on earning and I kept on putting, huddling my Bitcoin. And it started to accumulate, I started to say, you know, it's time for me to understand this a bit more. So I started going out and learning more and more about it. And, you know, the more I learned, the more I wanted, right? And, you know, I just kept on accumulating as much as I could. The business ended up, we closed it down. And so I lost that source of Bitcoin, but I started purchasing with my own income. And, you know, towards my Bitcoin stash, as they say. So that has been my experience. And I've seen the price shot up from 3,000. And at today's date, I think the last time we checked, we're at about 62, 63, around there. So yeah, it's been a wild ride.
It has. And it's like, the thing I like about your story is that even though you sold because you were happy, you took profit, you were happy, you sold, you didn't stay bitter. And you had like the perfect reopening to Bitcoin by accepting Bitcoin as payment for your services. I know of a guy who in 2017, he was levered, highly levered, and the price shot up, it crashed, he got wrecked. And even up to today, if I speak to him about it, he does not want to hear the word Bitcoin. Like,
yeah.
Because and that's the thing. Like, I find that if you're too greedy,
yeah,
you're not going to make it.
Not at all. NGM.
You're not going to make it. Like this sense of humility and like almost like the hustle mentality of trying to figure things out and. You provide a service, someone needs to be anonymous, okay, whatever, you know, like that seems to have been the way to like really get into the game. Now I think it's changing a little bit because it seems like Bitcoin is becoming a bit corporate in my opinion, but.
Yep. It's changing. It's funny enough, I thought it was getting corporate back in the day because I when I got in 2013, I was all about mining. I need to start mining some Bitcoins. I had my computer at the time. I didn't have any miners and whatever. But when you check the forums, they'd say, hey, it makes no sense to use a computer to mine Bitcoins anymore. It's just, Bitcoin is beyond what a computer can. They're saying the corporate people are now in and, you know, the millionaires are buying up these big ASIC miners and it's squeezing out the small man. So, you know, I had a bit of bitterness about Bitcoin in the early days. So I did feel that, but you realize it's not that. You know, there are people who started out as hobbyists and they became those big people who are having these multi-million dollar miners. So.
Yeah, totally. And so how does your family feel about Bitcoin? Actually, maybe back up, because you said that you're always an early adopter. How has your family and friends reacted to you, like, bringing home these new tech ideas?
So it's funny. So I'm in the U.S. now. My mom lives in the U.S. And so yesterday, I've always been, you know, teasing her. Not teasing, just like talking about Bitcoin in general. She knows I'm going to a Bitcoin conference, you know. So yesterday, I kind of, you know, came and said, Mom, you know, do you have a retirement account? I said, yes, you know, I'm investing my retirement. And we start talking about retirement account. She says she puts in 6%, the company gives her 6, you know, so on. Yeah. So I was like, okay, cool. So, how about investing 1% in Bitcoin? I'm like, okay. She paused for a second. I'm like, I guess. I was like, yes! Orange pill.
That was easy.
Because I framed it, because I'm saying if she's doing 6% in her retirement, then having a 1% in Bitcoin, that shouldn't be, you know, it sounds smaller, right? So it's kind of, you know, ambushed her a bit. but yeah, she's like, yeah, I guess that doesn't sound too bad. I tried to up it to 3%, but she's like, eh, wait, no, not yet. But I got her to commit to doing DCing Bitcoin 1% every month. So that's good news for my family. And they know that I'm into technology and, you know, I'm not just like in there fancifully. I do my research. I understand what I'm doing. And they know I invest in Bitcoin as well. So they see it as something that they don't understand, but they think I've done enough work for it not to be like a scam or something.
Yeah.
So I'm trying to educate them. I've gotten a couple of friends, Orange Pill, they're buying Bitcoin. I think my sisters should be starting soon as well. So it, people are, you know, they're seeing not only what I'm seeing, but they're seeing what's happening in the just general space. And media is starting to talk about it more openly. They're finding that, you know, billionaires are signing up to it and so on. So there must be something in there, but they just don't understand it as much as yet.
Yeah, there's less FUD. I actually, my sister has a publication called L3 Magazine, and she also works with VP Records in New York. And so I said, you know, since I finally got someone from Jamaica on my podcast, do you have any questions? And like for herself and also for her audience. And so she asked, explain like you were talking to a baby. How does a person acquire Bitcoin? The easiest, most simple way to get Bitcoin.
Okay. So Bitcoin is like, let me think about this a bit. Think of Bitcoin as a kid, you know, they're toys, right? However, like collectibles. Okay, I was in Pokemon, right?
Yeah.
So they're Pokemon toys, right? Pokemon cards. And you, a couple of years ago, they printed perhaps a couple hundred thousand Pokemon cards, right? And they're no longer printing Pokemon cards. So whatever number of Pokemon cards are there, that's the only one that's left. Now, Pokemon card, because they've gotten rare, the value in them have gone up.
So limited supply. The supply is capped.
Yeah, the company that printed Pokemon cards, they're no longer printing cards, you know. Or if they're printing cards, it might be some newer set of Pokemons from 150 up. But the original Pokemon cards, if you own those are classics, right? So what happens is that more and more people are starting to learn about Pokemon. Even people who weren't born when Pokemon came out. And they, you know, this sounds like a nice classic piece to own. A part of the early 2000s, you know. And as more and more people learn about it, then more and more people want some, right? However, there's a limited supply. So if I love my Pokemon card and I have a Charizard, which is a rare holographic Charizard card, in order for me to give it up, you have to give me something of equal value. And money is something I guess we all consider to be a bearer of value. So less and less people want to sell theirs, the price of mine will go up. Right? And I know that price will remain up because they won't be printing any more Pokemon cards, right? And later on down in time, if I choose to, I can sell the Pokemon cards that I purchase for probably an even higher price as the rarity goes up. And it's holding its value over time. And if I choose to travel to the US or China, you know, I still have a market for my Pokemon cards because it keeps its value over space. And, I guess those are simple ways. And I guess because now it has value, I can perhaps do transactions. So if you have a PS2 I want to purchase, three Pokemon cards, a Charizard, a Pikachu, a Dugtrio, and that's worth the price of a PS2. And I get value for holding onto my cards for as long as I can afford to. So I think that's a kind of simple way if you're into Pokemon.
A limited supply.
Yeah.
So
right.
So I don't have any Pokemon cards whatsoever.
Right.
and I would like to get a Pokemon card.
Mm-hmm.
How would I do that? Would I go to... So I met you on Twitter, thanks to Cal Casa from Bitcoin Burr and Bitcoin NACFA. And so would I say, oh, you know, Rohan, I hear Pokemon cards are amazing. You know, the cost of living is going up. And I understand that the value of Pokemon cards will probably go up higher than the cost of living. So I would like to get a Pokemon card. Satoshi, we'll say.
Right.
So how would I do that in the Caribbean specifically? Would I go to an exchange that's like hosted in the U.S. or how would I do that?
Right. So there are a number of ways. The simplest way is find someone else who has Pokemon cards and would rather to have money instead of Pokemon cards. Right. So if you can bid, be the highest bidder. I mean, if I have the card, and you know, I like it, but I need to buy some food. Right.
Yeah.
And this, I can't eat the Pokemon cards, right? You need to transact it in some way. So you find people who are willing to let go of it. And you bid a suitable price. And it might be higher than the market price, but it's accessible. So just like that, that's similar to Bitcoin. You find people who, there are people there who have their Bitcoin. And you know, just like me, when I had my half a Bitcoin, you know, I thought making 100% on it was awesome.
Yeah.
There are a lot of people who are in the place where I am right now, where I was that back then, you know, so.
Yeah.
So there will always be a market for sale, peer-to-peer market. Now, there are also organizations who realize there's a market for it, and they accumulate as much as they can, and then they sell. Right, and they sell, of course, for a profit as well, but because they have so much and you know, and they're in the business of selling, they can give away the Bitcoin because they perhaps acquire more to sell, and these are what we call exchanges, and there are a couple of exchanges that are accessible to Caribbean people. There are some restrictions from certain banks and certain credit cards, but I found that there are certain banks and credit cards that do allow you to purchase from certain exchanges overseas. For the Caribbean, I know CEX is one that's very popular.
So yeah.
You can use a credit card, go there and purchase as much as you want, as much as the bank allows you. Until the restrictions start to come in, because I know I read Nigerian banks have started to put on restrictions on buying Bitcoin in Nigeria.
Yeah.
A couple of other countries. But so far in the Caribbean, we're still kind of new, so I don't know if they hate it enough as yet or if they'll embrace it. So we can purchase through exchanges right now. So that's, I guess, the simplest way to get it, to acquire it at this point.
And let's say I don't have a bank account, and I live in Trinidad or Jamaica or St. Kitts and Nevis, you would say then that I would opt for the peer-to-peer option?
Right. So peer-to-peer, there are always people there willing to Bitcoin arbitrage. They get it at a low price and sell it at a higher price. So just ask around and you'll find somebody, trust me. They're not all of them are like public that they sell or whatever. But once you just start asking people, you know, you'll end up finding somebody who sells Bitcoin close to you. It's generally at a premium, but what I've always told people that, you know, Bitcoin goes up so much that get Bitcoin at a premium, and because you'll earn that money over time. Whatever you lost in that exchange, you'll get it back over time. You know, just because if you go in Bitcoin thinking long term, thinking that, you know, the aim is not just to make 100%. The aim is to own piece of the most valuable real estate on earth.
Yeah.
Your aim is not just to make 100% and sell. It's a long term investment. And
yep.
You know, if you do sell, it's gonna be on something that you really value. Some personal investment, or you know, you're not going to sell Bitcoin to invest in something else. You know, you're going to sell Bitcoin for you know, bettering your life in some way or the other.
Low time preference.
That's
after I read the Bitcoin
Standard by Saifedean.
Yeah. And he spelt out the concept of low time preference. I was like, oh my gosh, excuse me. Oh dear. I was like, that's what my father has been trying to explain to me for my whole life. You know, like this notion of, cause like, I used to think my parents were just cheap, you know, like tight fisted. They would never spend money on like fast food, just junk or fiat food kind of thing. And, and so like when I was in university and I traveled and I met people who were more fluid with things, you know, I thought, you know, I must have grown up in this like, like in this like extraordinary, like unfortunate circumstance because they would not let go of their money. Like, I won't tell too many stories about my dad.
He's not here to counter,
but yeah, I had some embarrassing moments as a kid. Like the man refused to buy a car and took the bus, and he was a teacher at the same school as me, so it was embarrassing. I'd be on the bus with my dad going to school, like, but anyways, so fast forward, I read about low time preference, and I'm like, oh my god, I get it. I understand. And so, like, I wonder in the Caribbean if sort of like a low time preference mentality were to sink in, or were to like just spread, how that could change culture.
Yeah. You know, when I came into Bitcoin taught me a lot, more than just about, you know, digital currency and whatever. I learned about investment, and that low time preference thing is like one of the big ones. Because, and what I've learned about a lot of people who were like in the early days of Bitcoin, you know, they had 1,000 bitcoins and, you know, they just spent it on whatever, you know, they made 100% and they sold all 1,000 bitcoins. I've heard like tons of stories like that. And, you know, the reason I sold it because I thought, hey, I'd make $100, you know, so I can use it to spend on something else. And what I never understood what investment was, you know, investment. My mantra on investment now is when you invest with the mindset of never selling. I'm a big fan of Michael Saylor, and he asks this question: if you were to have bought real estate in Manhattan in 1900, when was the best time to sell it? Yeah. Was it 1930, 1950, last year when real estate prices shot up? It's never, right? Because it will keep on going up. Manhattan is just the most expensive square feet in the US. It's just an expensive real estate that will just keep on going up. Instead of spending it, you find ways to leverage it and use it to earn money, or you borrow against it or something, but you don't do it to sell it. Because it's just limited, it's scarce, it's valuable, and it keeps on going up, right? And when you think about investment in that sense, your time preference just automatically goes up. You know, you don't think of, you know, how can I make a quick buck? How can I get rich quick?
Yeah.
And a lot of people look at Bitcoin as this get rich quick scheme, and a lot of those people who are the ones who lose a lot of money. You know, you try to buy the top and sell at the bottom, and you know it never worked.
Yeah, that's what they end up doing: buy the top, sell the bottom. Right. I think I was lucky because I grew up with these concepts. I just wasn't mature enough to actually. I opened my first savings account when I was 16. I worked at a call center, and when I was 16, one of my like many after-school jobs, and there was this guy. I wish I remembered his name, but he was like, "Who do you bank with?" So I told him the name of my bank, and he was like, "You know, if you open an account with, I think it was like ING, it was called ING back then, they'll give you like, I don't know, 5% interest." And at the time, because I'm 43, when I was 16. That was like a big deal, you know? So I'd get paid like every 2 weeks, and I used to write myself checks for like $50 and just put it in the savings account. Just put it. And I actually still have that account today.
Yes.
So like decades. And I've seen, like, I've got like data, okay, to see how the interest rate has decreased with time. And not just that, the fees have increased.
Yep.
So I've seen money just like disappear.
Mm-hmm.
I pretty much drained that account to buy Bitcoin. I left just a little bit in there, you know, because you never know one day if I go back to Canada or whatever. But that, like, that sort of savings mentality has always been with me. But just with time, I've been like, what's the point? Interest rates are so low. They're negative in some instances. There's so many banking fees. Like, what do you do with your money? You buy a home, and what do? Like, most people can't afford to have, you know, property in Manhattan.
Most people
can't afford to have property in Switzerland. Most people can't afford to have property anywhere. So how do you acquire property rights that you can hold on to, pass down from one generation to another, and leverage, as you were mentioning? And like, for me, Bitcoin is just like the perfect solution.
Yeah, and there are people who, in the Caribbean, who have low time preference. I mean, you've heard of stories of people who are, you know, like lowly farmers, or they operate taxis or whatever, you know, menial job. And they'd send 3-4 kids to university, all right? And you wonder,
yeah,
where did they get this money from? And
yeah,
and all they did was save.
Yeah.
And they understood the importance of saving, right? However, we're now in a time where saving makes no sense, right?
You
put your the traditional savings account, you put your money in it, and you get 0.2%. It's ridiculous, right? And it's making, I mean, they're doing what they need to do in terms of putting away their money every month or whatever, but the returns that they're getting, lesser returns than what my grandparents would have gotten in their savings account, right? So what they need to do now, they're forced to learn about stocks and investment in stock markets and real estate and so on, when all you want to do is to put down your money. Right?
Yeah.
I read this article. It's the Bitcoin is a great definancializer, right? It destroys the need for the financial market, right? You don't need to know about stocks and PE and, you know, all the crazy financial terms that people throw around. You just put your money in Bitcoin and save towards your goal. Just like regular savings account used to allow us to do, right? You don't need to pay a manager. You don't need to pay any fees. You just save every day. You put a donut. If you're a single mother with 5 children and you're earning minimum wage, you say, okay, I'm earning $12 an hour. Let me put down 50 cents, right?
Yeah.
You choose what you're capable of managing, right? Bitcoin is not pro rich, right? You don't have to have a whole Bitcoin. You can save as little as one Satoshi, right?
Yeah.
And you put it down over time, and Bitcoin reward you over time, and that's what I just love about it. It doesn't discriminate rich or poor. It rewards everybody in the same way. The same percentage that Michael Saylor or whoever billionaire Bitcoiner gets, the same percentage I get. You know, it's fair across the board, and we all benefit in the same way. Once we do, we save, we dollar cost average and huddle, right? So that's what I really love about Bitcoin, as you know, just the principle that supports it and what it does in terms of building wealth and allowing us to invest our hard earned fiat into something that will grow over time.
Can you, I guess, just leave the audience with tips or advice if you're just starting out in Bitcoin?
Right. So this might, I always give this advice. I was like, there are three things I say. Have a long time preference. So if you're going to invest in Bitcoin, don't think about just claim your profits tomorrow, right? You're going to be like me. You're going to claim 100% profit and lose out on 2,000% profits, right? So have a long-term preference. A minimum 2 years. No one has ever invested in Bitcoin for 2 years and lost. It's check the charts. With 2 years, you will definitely make a profit after 2 years, right? Two, DCA, which is dollar cost averaging. Like, you don't have to put you don't have to wait until you have $100,000 to or whatever to invest in Bitcoin. You invest as little as you understand, or as much as you understand, right? And you do it often because it's a different type of asset. The price fluctuates. The market is still young, so the price still fluctuates a lot, right? So to get the best of the highs and the lows, invest. My recommendation is weekly. Put a small amount of Bitcoin every week. There are tools that allow you to do that. I mean, for the Caribbean, I don't think there are any tools available now. I'm working on one, but there are no tools available right now that allow you to DCA automatically. So you have to manually go and put in a small amount of Bitcoin every week. And you benefit from the highs and the lows. And so have a low time preference, DCA, and as I like to say, HODL. Don't spend. Like, think of this as you're trying to get a piece of digital real estate that you're getting less and less access to every year, right? It's getting more and more expensive to purchase. I mean, when I just started, I could have bought many Bitcoins, right? But I didn't because I didn't understand the gravity and what Bitcoin would be. But now I do. I try to every opportunity I get to invest in it. I told someone the other day on Twitter that the majority of my net worth is in Bitcoin, and it wasn't intentional. I didn't start out putting out majority of my, it became the majority of my investment, my net worth, right? It grew, I just sat there and just saw it just inflating. I was like, what's going on? right. So I just left it there and it grew, right? And I don't think we're nowhere close to the end of this growth. I think we're still very early. All right. Yeah. I thought we were late when it reached $1,000. I was like, oh, I wish I got in with that when there were people buying Bitcoin for $1 and I'd be such a billionaire right now. But I mean, it's not late. If you talk to people around you, you realize how early you are. It's just still a total conundrum to the average person, right? We are still very early and coming in just, don't think about trying to get rich and be a multi-billionaire. Just think about having a sustainable, stable way to invest and save just for your family, right? And if you look at it that way, it's not a get-rich-quick scheme. It's not something you're going to jump in to jump out. It's a long-term investment.
Thanks so much for tuning in. I hope you enjoyed this episode. It was a real pleasure to sit down and speak to Rohan, and I look forward to having him on the show again. If you have any questions or comments, you can send me an email at saida@fosterinclusion.com. That's saida@fosterinclusion.com. You can also follow me on my socials at Foster Inclusion. And I've actually posted my daughter's Bitcoin savings journey for you to follow. I'm obviously not revealing her stack, that is to say how many Satoshis she has, but I am sharing her returns as a percentage of US dollars so you can follow a real life example of how Bitcoin savings work. We dollar cost average weekly and updates are posted every month. To connect with Rohan, follow him on Twitter at Frazraz. That's FRAZRAS.
Bye.